Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Music, Money, and Life podcast. This podcast, as always, is brought to you by howtolicenseyourmusic.com. If you make music and you'd like to learn how to make money licensing your music, visit howtolicenseyourmusic.com today. When you go there, there's a link to get a totally free 202-page ebook all about how to make money licensing your music in TV shows, films, ads, and more. In today's episode, I speak with Heather Gardner, who is the head of music supervision and licensing for a company called Vapor RMW out of Toronto, Canada. During this episode, Heather and I focus primarily on the topic of licensing music in ads and commercials. We discuss the types of songs that work best, how much ads and commercials tend to pay, depending on how established you are and the type of ad you're licensing music for, as well as how to get started in this potentially lucrative field. It's a really good interview. I feel like I learned a lot just interviewing Heather, and I'm sure you'll get a lot out of it too. So without further ado, here's my interview with Heather Gardner. Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Music, Money, and Life podcast. Today, I'm speaking with Heather Gardner, who is the head of music supervision and licensing for a company called Vapor RMW out of Toronto. How are you doing today, Heather?
Good, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm looking forward to our conversation. And let's do this, Heather. Let's start by, if you could, tell us a little bit about Vapor RMW, how long you've been there, and the types of licensing and placement you guys do there.
Sure. So Vapor RMW is a full-service audio company located in Toronto and Vancouver in Canada. So we do everything from original composition, music supervision and licensing, obviously, sound design, voice direction, casting, pretty well, you name it, from the gamut of any audio service that a client could need, largely in advertising, in television, both scripted, unscripted, as well as animated work. We do work in film and in some video games as well. So we're doing a whole bunch of different things. On the music supervision and licensing side, we do a lot of advertising work for projects ranging from large car commercials to technology to some really neat opportunities lately that we've had to license some bigger name copyrights and recreate new versions. We also work on a number of television series that air in Canada and internationally. Working on some independent film right now. We've done some great video game work in the past. So we do a whole ton of stuff. I've been here for about 7-8 years now, and we've certainly shown no signs of slowing down.
Excellent. So why don't we jump right into talking about advertising? I've had a couple people on my podcast over the last couple years that sort of focus on advertising and commercials. But for the most part, you know, my courses and this podcast and my website have really focused more on the TV and film end of things. So that was one of the reasons I wanted to bring you on today, Heather, was to sort of pick your brain about licensing music and ads and commercials. Can you tell us a little bit about how that differs from TV and film licensing?
Definitely. Licensing music for advertising, it's a bit more of a high-stakes game. A lot of money is put into every ad campaign, whether it's a high-budget campaign or a low-budget campaign. You're still putting a ton of money in. So every song selection, because you only get one per spot as opposed to multiple per episode or multiple in a film, has a lot more weight to it because you could make or break your entire campaign, which you've potentially spent millions of dollars on, with the wrong song choice. So oftentimes we are tasked with finding a bigger name song with more recognizability in advertising, because there's a cachet to that, and a client may be looking for something that they hear, or the viewer hears from the kitchen, hears a song they know, walks back to the television to see what that was, getting them to pay attention to their product. Other times they want the exact opposite, where we're looking for something new and exciting for a brand that is new and exciting, so that they are able to align that with their brand image. And then other times we get to combine the two, which is really fun, that we are looking for a recognizable copyright, but we are creating a new version or licensing a cover or doing something new with that song. So you have both that recognizability factor, but you also have that new and exciting factor, which is kind of the best of both worlds and is a lot of fun for us on our end. But I mean, generally, you're working with more money than you would be in film and television, which is nice, but you're also working with bigger asks. You're working with more value for each of those spots. So it's not necessarily that you have all this freedom because you have more money, because you have more restrictions on you as well.
That makes sense. And would you say, because there is more money, because the budgets tend to be a lot larger, is there a proportionate amount of competition? Is there more competition for these types of spots because they're more lucrative?
They're obviously the spots that, as a songwriter or as a music creator, you want to get because there is more money involved. And there are less of them just because you have a brand that's creating a handful a year, as opposed to we might be doing a TV show that has 4 tracks licensed per episode and then 13 episodes. So we're getting to license a lot less music per brand, but they are bigger spots per brand. So they're definitely something that an artist is looking to be a part of and is very excited about. That being said, you're usually looking for something very specific. So the bands that you would necessarily be competing against to get those placements, it's a smaller pool for each one. We're usually given a lot more criteria than we would be in film, television, and there's a little bit less room to flex with those criteria. We're often looking for specific lyrics, where in film, television, it's not always as important what the lyrics are so much as the overall vibe and the mood that it creates. But in advertising, lyrics are incredibly important because you have maybe a few seconds in a 30-second spot to get a hook out. And if you're going to use lyrics, they need to be the right ones. So often we're working with a smaller pool to start with because we have it narrowed down based on budget, based on lyrics, based on the terms that we need. We're able to kind of break it into smaller chunks, but people are definitely wanting to be involved in the advertising world.
Yeah, for sure. And can you talk a little bit about what the types of songs that tend to work best for advertising, what those types of songs are like stylistically and lyrically? Can you kind of tell us what some of the common themes are?
It really goes in waves, which is interesting, that you'll go through phases where you'll seem to be hearing the same song all the time in advertising, and then a few years later you won't hear anything like that. A few years ago it was a lot of hand claps and a lot of upbeat folk pop and a lot of happy, happy music, and the ad industry seems to have turned a little bit and is doing a lot more emotional, tug at your heartstrings tracks that are trying to still attach themselves to the viewer, but in less of a let's all be happy way and more of a let's get to the root of what this brand might mean to you way. So brands are always trying to humanize themselves, and music is a great way for them to do that. So lately especially, I've found that we're doing quite a bit on the more emotional side, but then of course you're always going to have brands who are looking for really cool tracks, modern production, something that sounds like it would fit in on the radio, often for car commercials or big soft drink brands and companies that very much are part of the pop culture. So we do a lot of indie rock, a lot of indie pop with very modern production sounds that sound like it could come right off the top 40. In terms of lyrics, it's a little bit all over the place, but of course things to kind of stay away from are things that get too specific. Place names, brand names are really hard to get ad licenses for. If your song references Cadillac and we want to put you in a Toyota commercial, that would cause a problem. And things like that, But often we're looking for songs that can be interpreted in many different ways. And that doesn't mean you need to be generic with your lyrics or generic with your sound, but a song that, and as most great songs do, three different people can listen to it and they can take something different out of it so that it can, it doesn't have to score an ad completely. It doesn't need to say, go buy this product, but something that captures those same emotions that the brand identifies themselves with.
Interesting. So let's say sort of hypothetically, because most of the people that listen to this podcast are artists and songwriters and they play in bands and they're obviously interested in licensing their music. Would you say that most of the artists that you work with, are they writing music specifically kind of anticipating these types of projects, or are you just working with their existing catalogs and they happen to have music stylistically and lyrically that fits advertising? Which sort of approach do you see most writers taking?
I think it's usually the latter, and I would argue that to make really good music, it's really hard to write it with all of those criteria in mind. It really does start to sound formulaic as soon as you're paying too much attention to it. There are some writers who just write really great ad music. That's what they gravitate towards. That's what is natural to them, and that's what feels authentic. But you can definitely hear when somebody is writing something because they've been told that these are the things that work well in advertising. And sometimes it works, and I'm guaranteed we've licensed a bunch of that too. But I do think the ones that are the most exciting and the things that feel the most authentic to us are tracks that came out of a band or a songwriter's organic creative process and just happened to work really well.
Yeah, that's really cool. That's sort of the seems to be the consensus, because I'm asking, you know, different people that I interview sort of this same series of questions, and that's a question that I ask everybody that I interview, and over and over I'm really hearing that you should just write what you're inspired to write. But it almost seems a little counterintuitive, because it does seem like there's such a specific type of music that works for advertising, but like you said, maybe if you just happen to write music that sort of aligns with that vibe, then that's the best sort of approach to take, just to write what you write and get it out there.
I think so. I really do think in licensing there is a place for everything. There are more places for certain things, but we've licensed everything from Russian hip-hop to heavy metal to punk to any of those fringe genres that you really wouldn't necessarily think you'd find a spot for. There are spots for everything, but I think when somebody who writes in one genre starts trying to write in something different just so that they have the commercial viability of writing for advertising, it really does start to feel like they are writing for advertising. And it's hard, and we find it on the original side too, you're trying to find writers who can write for advertising without sounding like they're writing for advertising. And sometimes that's in the production element, sometimes that's in making things sound a little bit more like a song than a score, but there's definitely tricks and tips to it that as you write more, you can kind of figure out. But I do think the best tip for anybody is to write what you write and write it well. And sure, you can play with different elements that might work better, but recognize that if that's not the area that you write well in, not to force it. And there is somewhere that your music will fit.
I like that response, because that still gives you as an artist sort of a sense of creativity. You're not trying. It's not just about making music a commodity. It's still about creating art. And when it works, it works. But I think the bottom line is you should write sort of from the heart and try to be authentic. So let me ask you this next question, Heather. This is another question that I'm asking most of the people that I'm interviewing. And the question is sort of the idea of pursuing music licensing as a career. Do you think, from your perspective doing what you do, do you think it's a viable career path in terms of like being able to actually make a living from licensing as an artist?
Like any element of your career as an artist, right now especially, I don't think you can rely on one area specifically to be the bulk of your income. I think it is something that can be incredibly commercially viable, and something that if you're able to get into a good kind of routine, that you're able to connect with the right people and they keep coming back to you, you've got a diverse catalog, that there is definitely the potential for it. But I think there's also a lot of misunderstanding that you can land one or two sync placements and all of a sudden that's all you need to do for the year. Often, especially in Canadian film and television, a lot of the licenses we're doing are a few hundred dollars here, a few hundred dollars there, a little bit of back end, but there's certainly nothing unless you are licensing a ton of music that would pay your rent for the year. And ads are great. If you land one or two of those, that's awesome, and you're able to do a little bit more with that. But oftentimes we are looking for the bigger artists for our ad campaigns just for creative reasons more so than anything else. So I would never rely on it exclusively as a form of income. And I think the most exciting stories for us when we're licensing artists is an artist or a band that is touring, that's developing buzz in other areas of their career, just released a really cool video, and that we're able to pitch to our clients saying, look at this story, they are buzzing, they're building, they're getting all of this attention. Attaching that onto your brand would be beneficial for you and not just beneficial for the band to have their song in this ad campaign. So it really does work as a full package and helps us find artists too when we hear them on a Spotify viral chart or they pop up on Hype Machine or you see them in another music blog or hear a friend refer them to you. Those are the people you're going to get excited about because they have a story. And that's not to say we don't license a ton of music from writers who are writing more so than they have a touring career. They may have kind of established themselves as writers both for other artists and for licensing, but they have quite the catalog at that point, and we're able to pitch multiple songs of theirs on multiple projects. And when one of those lands every 2 years, you know that you're not the only person who's bringing them money.
Yeah, that's something that I've been hearing more and more, and in particular in reference to ad campaigns and really sort of high-end, more lucrative type placements, that it's not necessarily enough just to have a great song, that you really need, and it seems like more and more so this is the case, that you really need, like you said, a story. You need to be sort of making things happen and establishing yourself as a career musician. Would you say that's, how important would you say that is for ad campaigns? Is it possible to land music in a Toyota or Subaru commercial without being a touring musician?
It totally depends on the brand. It really does. Sometimes we'll get a brief and they really aren't concerned about everything else. They want the best song. And at the end of the day, that really is what we're looking for. That being said, if you're a brand that is really looking to be on the cutting edge, looking to be new and hip and looking to attract a younger audience, having a story around the band is important because they want to make sure that that band also falls into the same audience that they're trying to attract with their product. So as much as it's not cross-promotion, it's still a little bit of cross-promotion. When the band tweets that their song was in this commercial, all of their followers are going to then be checking out that product and vice versa. So they're trying to tap into a certain market by licensing certain music.
Okay, and can you do that without touring? And the reason I ask is because I work with a lot of artists that I know don't tour, and they don't necessarily want to tour. Is it possible to build buzz online through different blogs and just promoting yourself really well in places like YouTube? Can you do that without touring, or do you feel like that's a real critical component in doing this?
I think touring is always an important component, but I don't think it's mandatory. I think without touring, you have a lot more hurdles that you need to jump over because you're not working in specific markets. You're not getting that one-on-one fan interaction. The fact that we have social media now makes a huge difference, and that's, for a non-touring artist, an area that didn't exist for them to make those connections. And really, when you are starting out or you are establishing yourself, it's the one-on-one connections that make a difference. And whether that's somebody who saw you open up for another band at a show, were blown away by your music and becomes your next biggest fan, or it's somebody who discovers you on YouTube, is blown away and becomes your next biggest fan. It doesn't really matter as long as you have people who are loving your music, not in a disposable way, but in a way where they're invested in your career.
Got you. So as long as you're doing everything you can do to get your music out there, whether it's via YouTube and Facebook or you're actually touring and doing shows, whatever you're doing, as long as you're doing it successfully, it can work. Am I interpreting you correctly? Yeah.
I think so. so. And I think a lot of it is about your level of engagement. I think you can put your stuff out there all you want, but if you're not engaging with the people who are enjoying your music, it's really difficult for them to stay interested in you for a long amount of time. There's so much music that it's so easy for somebody to love one of your songs and then forget that you ever exist. But as you're engaging with them, if you're, whether that's communicating on social media, that is when touring is nice, because somebody will then go see your show. You're able to keep them as a part of your story and make them feel part of that fandom, which is harder to do sometimes, especially you notice bands who have one or two songs and then you never hear from again aren't able to keep that same level of engagement.
Yeah, it sounds like you really need to build momentum and kind of keep it moving forward.
For sure.
Heather, let me ask you this question. Can you sort of, and I have an idea just based on my own experience and different people that I've interviewed, but can you kind of give us an idea of what different types of, and again, because I have a really good idea for TV and film, like I said, I've really focused on that, but what do different types of ad campaigns pay? What are sort of the pay ranges for different types of ad projects that you've worked on?
It really varies, and it varies based on the terms that somebody is asking for. It varies based on how long they want to use it for, and it varies based on the brand. A Coca-Cola is going to generally have more money to give than a local brand who's doing a commercial. So you could be looking in the couple $1,000 range, but if you're a big, big name artist who's licensing something for a very long time, worldwide, perpetuity, or even worldwide a year, you can be looking into the millions of dollars potentially. So that's, I mean, not something that's generally a number that an indie artist would ever get close to, but I think it really does depend, and that's so hard to give an answer as to how much it goes for, because there's not a going rate. It's kind of a, here's our budget, let's work back, here's what we have for music, and you could have three different commercials for the same band, and they could all have very different, or not band, brand, sorry, and have very different budgets.
Interesting. What about for like an indie artist who isn't a super established artist? Let's say they're doing really well regional in maybe LA or Chicago or New York. They're not necessarily touring, but they're doing shows and they've got a bit of buzz. Different blogs are writing about them. What could sort of be an anticipated, and I hate to put you on the spot, but I just want to kind of give people an idea what would be sort of a best case scenario for a major ad spot?
I mean, I would kind of anticipate anything from a few $1,000s to a few tens of thousands of dollars. If you have some buzz around you, if you're somebody who has a story, has some clout to negotiate a little bit, but it really does come down to what the budget for the spot is. And oftentimes we are working with a very set amount, and we would love to give that to an indie artist, but we aren't always given that option. So it really comes down to the budget that we're given. But if you're fairly independent but somewhat known at least within a certain territory, or you have someone working on your behalf who is able to negotiate on your behalf, maybe $20,000 to $30,000, and that's me thinking for a Canadian campaign. So your numbers would be different if you were in the States or if you were regional, but a Canada national campaign, which is normally what we would work on for pretty broad terms, that's kind of the most you would likely be looking at, probably lower than that as an indie artist.
Okay, that's interesting, because that was one of the questions I was going to ask you. You're based in Canada, so I guess you sort of answered my question, which is, sounds like you primarily do work in Canada. Do you cross the border down into the U.S. at all? Do you do any sort
of... Definitely.
Yeah?
And usually we're working on projects that originate here, not always, but often. So we do a lot of worldwide licenses. We do a lot of Canada-only licenses, and then we do various other things depending on what's going on. But a lot of the international products that we're working on would be a world license, and that would be, of course, more money, hopefully, than a specific territory or region.
Okay, gotcha. And the next question, and again, this is another question that I've been asking most of the people that I've been interviewing lately, and the question is about the future of the music business. What are your thoughts going forward, and, you know, from where we are now, looking forward the next few years, how do you feel about the future of the music business in general? Are you optimistic?
really hard to be pessimistic about the music business. I think you have to accept that things are going to change, but it's music and it's an industry on creating music. And I don't think that's an industry that can ever disappear, because there will always, always, always be a need and a want and that desire for there to be music. And I think we will certainly be going through waves and up and down. And I think we're in an interesting time where streaming services are going to figure it out, and they're going to figure out how to be profitable but also give money to the appropriate people. We're seeing it in music. We're seeing it in television. We're seeing it across the board now that we're really moving into this world of streaming and less a physical product. But there's always going to be a need for music. We aren't just going to stop listening to it. And so there will always be that desire, and it's just kind of a matter of figuring out how do we consume in a way that lets us be a consumer and not just a user of someone's product. And so they are getting money for whatever they're doing. And I think that's when I was talking about having to have your hat in different areas, whether it's not just licensing, but touring. And I think the expectation that you can make money in one area of the industry is certainly faded. So having to diversify, and that's where you see a lot of artists trying to get into licensing, because it's not something they've done before, but it's this new area that could potentially provide them with some income, which is exciting to see all these new bands who may have once thought having their music in an ad campaign was selling out, but are now really excited about the prospect of partnering with brands and doing these very interesting connections where they can get their music out to a lot of people in a very different way.
Yeah, absolutely. And like you said, it can still be a very creative and artistic endeavor. You're not necessarily selling out just because you have a song and a commercial. It can still come from a very authentic place, and it can help you sustain yourself at the same time.
I think if you are an artist who wants to make a living based on making music, then you need to kind of forget this whole idea of selling out. There is nothing wrong with wanting to make money by doing what you're doing. And there's nothing wrong with wanting to be able to make a career out of your passion and your talents. And whether that happens to be music or art or whatever it is, you need to get money from it somehow. And whether that was selling records, whether it's selling concert tickets, you're still selling. So associating yourself with a brand is really no different. It is somebody else who is buying your music. It just happens to align with what they think their brand vision is too.
Sure. And even, you know, back in the day when bands made money through different revenue streams and maybe more from selling CDs, they're still selling to people that work for corporations. So, it's kind of like the money ultimately comes from the same place in a sense.
Yeah, I think you either need to want to make money from it, or you have to not be making money at all from it. There is a very kind of fine line there where I do respect people who say no to licensing opportunities based on moral reasons. They don't want to be in a commercial for a particular restaurant because they're vegan, or they have other beliefs like that where the brand goes against their personal beliefs. And I'm totally accepting of anybody who says no to a campaign or a spot for any of those reasons. But I think the idea that they just don't want to be seen as making money for their music is kind of silly, because all you want to do is make money for your music.
Yeah, I concur 100%. I mean, if you're not making money from music and you're not able to sustain yourself, you can't keep making music. And so for me, I always look at it as the goal isn't necessarily to make a ton of money, but it's to make enough to make the whole endeavor sustainable so that I can keep making music and hopefully keep making better and improved music. So, of course, you need to make money to do that. So my last question for you, Heather, is the artist that you signed, what's your submission policy? Do you have an open submission policy? How can artists submit music to you?
For sure. We are very open. We license music from anywhere and everywhere. We're always looking for great new music. My email address is on our website, and we are always looking for great new tunes. That being said, we get a lot of them. So we do try and go through as much as we possibly can, but if you don't hear back from us, it's not that we hated it. It's that we don't have a spot for it right now. We will get to it as soon as we can, oftentimes when we're working on a specific project. So it's always nice if somebody does a little bit of research as to what we're working on, what kind of music we've licensed lately, and references that when they're sending us tracks. It helps me if I'm looking through my inbox and see somebody say, oh, hey, we saw you license this track for the series you're working on, Hello Goodbye. We think our music sounds somewhat like that. When you're working on the next season, we'd love for you to consider us. That would be a lot more helpful than an email from a band who has nothing to do with anything we've ever licensed before. So that helps us streamline our process a little bit. But we are, of course, as soon as I say we don't license X genre, we're going to need that genre. That's just the way the game seems to work.
And how can artists sort of figure out what you're working on, just by looking on your website at the different places you've licensed music?
Yeah, I mean, as soon as we get engaged on something that we can talk about, we're usually pretty active on Twitter and Facebook and chatting about new things that we can actually discuss is the hard part. In advertising, normally we can't talk about a campaign until it's on air, so it's difficult to pitch to somebody for a particular brief because we will be way past that by the time you know that we're working on it. That being said, if you see that we've licensed for a number of Hyundai commercials that all seems to have a fairly upbeat sound, then you can certainly send music saying, if you're working on another campaign for them, I think these songs might fit. Film TV is a lot easier to target because we work on those projects for so much longer and we're able to talk about them more when we get engaged on that project.
Excellent. Well, listen, Heather, thank you so much for doing this. I really appreciate you taking the time today. I want to tell everybody where to find out more about you. Your website is vapor-rmw.com. Vapor-rmw.com. All of your contact information for yourself and everybody else is right on your website. Heather, thank you so, so much for doing this. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
I feel like I learned a lot today.
Thank you for having me. This was fun.
Excellent, Heather. I will send you this when it's up on my website, and let's keep in touch.
Awesome.
Thanks, Heather.